This is Side Podcast episode 26, Honda Open Day. We are going to talk about the Honda Open Day, but as usual, there is tons of news to cover, so we're going to have to do that first.
Always Formula One news.
First on our list, there's been some changes at Spa.
Yeah, following on from the British Grand Prix, most of the Formula One teams have decamped to the revised Spa circuit for some testing.
Do they like it?
Generally, most of the changes have been well received, except for the pit lane entry, which seems to have caused a lot of consternation amongst drivers. Apparently, they might have made it a bit too narrow and a bit blind. So if there was an accident during the race, there might be a multiple car pileup in the pit lane, and some of the drivers are objecting.
Well, Sato said the pit lane is very narrow, so if a car stops there is no way other cars can pass, and also it is blind.
Yeah.
So it sounds a bit dangerous.
Well, it might add some excitement to the race.
Aren't they going to fix it, though?
I think the whole point of this test, actually, was for the teams to get used to the circuit, and the circuit to get used to the teams. And I would assume that if the teams raise an issue, they're going to get it fixed before the race. They've got till September to do it, so it doesn't seem like it's a major problem. Although it has dominated an awful lot of news this week.
We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, there was a rumour that the Grand Prix Drivers Association had written a letter to the circuit, but I'm not sure if the circuit actually has to listen to any letters from those guys, and whether or not they should take direction from Bernie. But I'm sure something will get sorted. If not, it's just another dynamic to the race. Crashing in the pit lane. Yay!
Someone with a rather cool name has left BMW and joined Honda.
A rather cool name?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Jorg Zander? I don't know.
Yes. BMW chief, what is he?
Chief designer.
BMW chief designer has defected to Honda as part of Honda's new major recruitment drive.
And I'll tell you what, if you didn't know about it already from the news, you would know from this week's Autosport, there's a full page advert for a chief designer for BMW Sauber.
Really?
Yes.
That's slightly weird, don't you think? Because surely if you are a Formula One chief designer looking for maybe a new team to go to, you'd know about this. You'd have your ear to the ground. You wouldn't open Autosport one day and go, oh my goodness, yeah, I could do that job.
Exactly.
That's me you're talking about there.
Well, it says things like, would you like to lead our design office and secure the further development of existing and future Formula One race cars?
Right.
Do you have a solid engineering background to degree level and some years in a leading position within a Formula One design? Well, if you did, you're not going to be reading Autosport, are you?
You're not going to be like, oh, I'm a bit unemployed. What can I be doing in the afternoons?
The type of people that read Autosport are me and you.
I'll go and get the job paper today, see if there's a job for chief designer in there this week. Because they come around all the time, don't they?
I've just noticed it says, do you have a detailed knowledge of FIA legality requirements regarding car components released for tests and races? I know someone that could do that.
I could do that. What, can I do any other things, though? Probably not.
No.
That's not me, then.
No, but, you know, you're halfway there.
Okay.
One-eighth of the way there.
Maybe it's something I should aspire to.
Every day, there's another development in the spy saga thing, isn't there?
It just goes on and on, doesn't it? It's quite exciting, though. I'm quite enjoying really kind of keeping up with it all. You get a really good inside knowledge of what goes on in Formula One teams from sort of cases like this.
It's quite possibly the most exciting thing going on at the moment.
Yeah, it's been kind of making all the news. Every time you hear a news bulletin, they mention some Formula One news, and then they sort of tag on the end line, by the way, there's this espionage saga going on where, you know, the two top teams are at each other's throats and accusing each other of all sorts of things. Every day, more news and more information comes out. You get another press release from another team, and all sorts of information leaking out in the press. It's all good stuff. Don't know what to make of it all, really.
Well, last time you said we were going to talk about it.
Yes.
Are we going to talk about it?
Well, I kind of got tired of waiting because we didn't have time to cover it last week, and we've been so busy the week before, we haven't really had time to go into it. I kind of wrote it all down on a blog. So if you go onto sidepodcast.com, you can read my thoughts on the whole saga. But everything I write kind of becomes irrelevant by the next day because more information comes out. So at the moment, I think we'll just leave it and see what happens for the next week or two, and then maybe put some opinion on it when it's kind of settled down a bit.
We'll definitely keep you posted anyway.
Absolutely. At the moment, all you need to know is there's nothing you really need to know, because all the all the teams basically just keep putting out these press releases, and it's all nonsense. I don't believe a word that's written in them. I don't believe anything anyone's telling me. And I'm sure the real truth will come out eventually, but it's not out at the moment.
That's my favourite kind of journalism. Here's what you need to know. You don't need to know anything.
Exactly. It's just, there's nothing to see here. Come back in a week when it's all sorted out.
Christian Albers has not been having a very good couple of weeks.
Not since the French Grand Prix. It kind of went downhill, didn't it?
He's been fired.
Yeah.
Well, actually, they said that they had to let him go because the sponsor had defaulted on payment.
But the sponsor denies that.
Yeah.
So really,
and it's quite convenient after his mishap in the pit lane and everything.
Yeah. probably maybe I guess Mike Gascoigne's patience ran out. He said enough is enough. I want someone else on my team. Who has he got lined up to replace Alves?
Well, I heard that it might be Kleen or Kartikeyan.
The correct answer to that question is no one.
Oh.
He sacked Alves without any decision of who he's going to replace him with.
Right.
No plan. Right, no foresight, no forethought.
My mistake.
Who are the potential replacements for Alves that might be waiting in the wings?
Well, I heard it might be Kleen or Kartikeyan.
Ah. Well, I heard it might be Winkelhock. Marcus Winkelhock could be in line. That's his name.
That's funny.
Marcus Winkelhock.
That's the best name ever.
I think that's how you pronounce it. anyway, he could be in line for a Spacker drive. And apparently we're going to know later this week.
But isn't Kleen testing for them? Did he do some testing?
Yeah, Honda released him. I think for the first time ever, Honda released one of their reserve drivers to another team. Given that, didn't they block Davidson in 2004, was it?
They did. He wanted to test for Williams, and they wouldn't let him.
They're not leaving. You're not going. Don't care. Not interested. And also, I think they did the same for James Rossiter earlier this year, who wanted to go to Supergirl. They said, nah, you're absolutely not leaving this team. And then Christian Kleen says, can I get a Spyker? Ah, no problem. Not bothered. It says a lot for Kleen, doesn't
either
it?
Either really? Kleen isn't very good, or there was some money involved.
A strange position from Honda, who are usually quite reluctant to let their drivers go.
And in more testing news, Sebastian Bourdais is back, isn't he?
He's had another test for Toro Rosso. This is the second one this year. So yep. Things must be going well with him. It looks like he might get a drive for that team.
Well, he's being very coy and saying he doesn't know anything about it.
Yeah, he's doing quite well in Champ... Is it Champ Car? Do they call it in the States?
Yep.
He seems to be... he's won several times. I forget how many times. I don't know my Champ Car history. I think he's won twice and he's leading the championship now. So he's quite a big name over there. And to bring him across would obviously be quite good to Formula One. But he's a Frenchman and there's no French Grand Prix. So he will be missing his home Grand Prix next year.
So that might help F1 in the States, because the same way that Montoya moving to NASCAR makes you interested in that.
Do you think there might be some kind of crossover? People who might be interested in following him over here?
Possibly, although they have just cancelled the US Grand Prix.
Yeah, well, that's kind of been on the cards for ages, isn't it? I mean, you know how Bernie goes and sorts out new Grand Prix. He says, oh, you can have a 5-year deal. And then 2 years into the deal, he goes, ooh, that deal's a bit shaky. We may not want to renew that deal with you. So he's been saying to the US Grand Prix, yeah, you may not get a renewal, you may not get renewal. And it's been going on and on and on. And to be honest with you, I think Indianapolis were getting slightly annoyed with Formula One. Obviously, there was the debacle with the 6-car start, which didn't go down too well. And the fact that Formula One didn't really back it up with any conversation or anything. It was down to Michelin to kind of make amends. So that obviously wasn't going in Formula One's favour. Then a little while ago came the news that I think might be confirmed tomorrow, that MotoGP may run at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Now the problem with that is Bernie is usually quite happy for MotoGP races to run on Formula One tracks. But Bernie likes to kind of get in there and decide what the track's going to look like. He gets his guy Herman Tilke in there to design the track, and he specifies how Formula One needs to be run. And then all the other racing series kind of fall in line behind that. When MotoGP went to Indianapolis, they kind of took issue with the banking. And they wanted to redesign, I think, the first corner and then reverse the track. Now, the problem with this is Tony George from Indianapolis Motor Speedway goes to Bernie and says, listen, we want to renew our contract this year, but we're going to make all these changes to the track for MotoGP. I kind of think that might have been the final nail in the coffin for the Indianapolis Grand Prix, don't you?
Doesn't sound like something Bernie would agree to.
It's going to upset the man. I mean, you know, there's all this talk of, they don't want to pay too much money and Bernie's asking for so much and we can't really afford it. But I think the real reason is if you're going to have a MotoGP race and you're going to change the racetrack to suit MotoGP, you're going to get on Bernie's nerves. And I think that probably spelled the end of it.
Well, Bernie was quite tight-lipped about the whole thing. He just said, we didn't reach an agreement. Let's see if we miss America.
Ouch. That's not very nice. That's a bit uncalled for.
But it's not America, though, is it? Because, you know, you never know. It could go somewhere else.
Well, there's a chance it could go somewhere else. There's a couple of places that have been mentioned. I mean, the problem you have with the States is the key Formula One audience is obviously in Europe. And Bernie's bending over backwards to kind of make night races happen so that the key target audience of Europe get to see races at a normal time. So when they're outside of Europe, it's in the evening there, and so it happens to be in midday in Europe. So the core audience gets to see Formula One at sensible time. There's nowhere in America that really suits European time sort of midday. So where to hold the race that, you know, I mean, Indianapolis was kind of borderline territory because it kind of happened in the evening. That was quite good for television audience and television ratings. But where else could in America do you hold a race that would suit the European audience? It's quite a difficult challenge. The other thing that I don't think Tony George kind of factored in to the equation when he was kind of renegotiating things with Bernie. And it's something that our friend Brendan commented, emailed us about today, didn't he? And that is that since Hamilton won the USGP, America's kind of woken up to Formula One a little bit more than perhaps they used to when Schumacher won it year after year after year.
Oh, what a surprise. Well,
so suddenly Tony George is going, hold on, people are interested in Formula One. Oh, no, that wasn't part of the equation. So now he's kind of thinking, oh, sugar, maybe I wonder if I can get it back or not.
Is he?
Well, kind of. He's claiming it in one interview I read that he was trying to win it back. But I think the damage has been done. I don't think Bernie was going to want to go
back. Once you upset Bernie, he's never coming back.
Well, it's going to cost you twice as much as it ever was. That's the thing. And he's got so many other countries offering him so much money that why would he want to take less money to run in the States? I guess the teams want to run in the States, and the American fans obviously want to see Formula One in the States. But for Bernie's coffers, he's going to get more money elsewhere. He's going to get more money from Egypt, for example. I don't know if I'm going to miss the racetrack itself. It wasn't a particularly great circuit, was it? The infield was a bit silly. Wasn't great for overtaking. I did like the banking. It was the only banking in Formula One. It'd be a shame to see that gone. But I don't know if I'll entirely miss the whole race in Indy. It would be nice to see it somewhere else in the States, though.
My favourite bit of news this week is that Formula One bosses failed to secure exclusive rights to the F1 trademark, the abbreviation F1.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was only in the UK they were trying to do that. So it's not worldwide rights, and they haven't lost the case entirely. I think it was also a slightly weird case because didn't the guy running the defence quote Wikipedia as an actual reliable source of information in a court of law?
It is pretty reliable.
Is it? Well, the thing with Wikipedia is you could just type in your own... Anyone can edit it. I could go and edit it, and I could type in something that I wanted to appear in court and then go and read it in court, couldn't I?
Well, I thought his best argument was he said that if people who buy old F1 cars, if they club together and join a race, all these individuals, then that should be called an F1 race. Why not?
That's true. That's a very good point.
That was my favourite argument.
That is a good point. I mean, I'm glad he's lost because it is just an abbreviation. It shouldn't be trademarked. He's already got Formula One. Formula One spelled O-N-E, and God knows how many other trademarks. He tried to trademark Grand Prix as well, I think. So it's a good thing that he lost. Yay, finally Bernie loses something. But I suspect this isn't the end of it.
And our final bit of news is about the energy recovery plans. They've been delayed, haven't they?
Well, the teams are hoping they're going to be delayed, aren't they? They've kind of clubbed together.
Well, said, I think Mario Tyson of BMW had a word with Max Mosley at Monaco and sort of said, you know, we don't want to do it.
Right.
and, you know, they've said they'll talk about it and sort it out. But basically, they don't want to do it. Because there's changes in 2009 and then changes in 2011, that's a lot.
So what they were trying to do is defer the energy recovery systems being introduced until 2011 when the engine regulations change again. So they're trying to defer the cost and the effort for 2 years is what they're basically saying.
Yes, Shuhei Nakamoto of Honda, he said, we have agreed that we don't want something fixed for 2009 and then change it for 2011. We do not want to make double the effort, which I think is a fair point.
Yeah, I mean, in return, the teams obviously still want to be kind of eco-conscious. So in return for deferring the rules for 2 years, they're suggesting they should introduce biofuels 2 years earlier to kind of bring that bit forward, which is less of a cost burden to them and can still kind of be slightly green aware.
So basically, they're just swapping biofuels for recovery systems.
Yeah, I mean, interestingly, they managed to get every single team to sign this document. So it's a unanimous agreement, which is unusual in Formula One. So basically, nobody wants to do it, and there's no support for it. So maybe Max might actually have to defer to the teams on this one.
Now it's time to talk about our Honda Open Day visit.
Okay.
Woohoo.
This is our last event of the year, isn't it? It's all we've got planned.
Well, yeah, it's the only thing we had tickets for left. Yeah. So my ticket drawer is empty.
Oh, you sad.
No, I'm quite relieved, actually. Okay. I'm quite exhausted.
Quite an exhausting couple of months, wasn't it? So how did it go then?
Well, for a change, we got there on time,
yep.
Which is always a good thing, except it wasn't a good thing because we had to wait an hour to get on a coach. They had this weird park and ride thing. So we parked in an airfield and then there were coaches to take you to the factory.
Yeah.
And it was a really bad system.
It wasn't thought through very well, was it?
Apparently there were 10 coaches, but I didn't see that many. And one of them had broken down.
Right, good start.
So there was a whole line just basically going around the whole car park,
yeah.
People waiting to get on the coach. We literally waited for an hour in the car park to get to the factory.
We were just stood in a field, basically, in a line, just thinking, you know, passing the time, kicking the tyres.
Lucky it wasn't raining, really.
Really lucky it wasn't raining. Not only would the field have been an absolute quagmire and we'd have got stuck, we'd have got soaked too in the process. There was no covering. And so a bit of a kind of disorganised start to the proceedings. Also, the buses apparently were delayed because they were both going down country lanes, which were essentially the width of the bus, in both directions. So the buses were holding themselves up, trying to come back and pick
up
more people.
We had to reverse twice.
Yeah, when we finally got on the bus, we were obviously, you know, left the airfield, went round a corner, met a bus, backed up into the airfield, let that bus go forward, went on our way again, met another bus. So they were kind of their own worst enemies. They kind of needed a one-way system and have the buses going around in a big loop just to kind of keep things moving. So not a great start to proceedings, really, was it?
Eventually we got in the gate and the first thing we heard was Murray Walker on stage. So we like ran to the stage.
Yay!
Yeah, and he just talked for a little bit.
Yep. I talked about his ambassadorial role within Honda and what he was doing, which basically equated to, I'm going to lots and lots of Formula One races and enjoying myself.
Because we'd run to the stage, we missed out on the programme section. So everyone had a programme except me.
Everybody knew what they were doing except you.
Yeah, and I didn't like it. So then we had to run back to the gate and get a programme.
Trying to get a bit more organised then. And what was the programme any better than the Formula One programme?
Yes.
Yes.
Much better, much thinner, much cheaper. It was actually very clever because I had pictures of all the drivers.
Yeah.
And I think they're ready for all the signing sessions they had. Except for Barrichello, who was pre-signed because he wasn't there.
Fair enough. But that's good pre-planning. You know, that's a good thing. They thought ahead on that one.
Best bit of planning they did.
Okay. What else happened?
Well, then we wandered around a bit, just scoping the place out. And there were queues everywhere.
Mega queues. Kind of like 200-300 people deep, wouldn't it? Just kind of snaking their way around the factory forecourts.
We looked at one queue, it was massive, and we thought, well, we'll go and find out what they're queuing for.
Oh, yeah.
So we went to the front of the queue, asked what they were queuing for. He said it's a factory tour,
yes.
But the tour is wrong or something. We've done it wrong.
They've got the route wrong, so they're replanning the factory tour, and at the moment it's stopped.
They're on hold. And all these people are just joining the queue at the back with no idea what's going on.
I think we were the only people who walked to the front to actually find out what was worth queuing for.
I don't know if they knew what they were queuing for, but they definitely didn't know it wasn't happening.
No, and so that queue just got longer and longer through there. I don't actually know if it got going again, but
it was enormous when we left, so probably not.
No, I guess not many people saw that factory.
They did have quite a cool pit stop challenge thing. It was a bit more involved than Toyota's let's just change a wheel.
There was a team of about 20 volunteers who were kind of grabbed out of the audience, and they were given proper overalls and helmets and stuff. There was a lollipop man, and there was a girl on the front who was tweaking the front wing, and everybody had a wheel. And it was a proper car with kind of an engine in it of sorts.
Kind of an engine.
Well, it looked like a Formula One car.
Sounded like a lawnmower.
I think it was a Honda lawnmower engine. It was a bit weird. It had the suspension travel of a Formula One car, so it looked like a proper car. It kind of bounced over the curbs. It wasn't really designed to go around a car park, obviously. And it kind of kept going around in circles for a bit, pretending to be in a race. And then it would pull into the pits again, and they'd do another pit stop.
But I was quite annoyed because whoever it was had Jensen's helmet on,
yeah.
But it really wasn't Jensen.
That was weird. Yeah, it looked, obviously Jensen was there somewhere.
But
today,
he wouldn't have spent his day going around in circles, let's be honest.
No, I don't know who it was, but it was someone pretending to be Jensen, which was quite freaky. And I'll tell you something, if that woman put any more wing on that car, it would be vertical.
Every time they came into the pits, she put a bit of wing on.
Another two turns.
You'd think she could have gone back the other way.
Yeah, eventually it's just going to be like an air brake on the front of the car. Mind you, that might be an improvement.
There was a guy doing like announcements over the loudspeaker, and he was actually stood quite near to a loudspeaker, and there was a delay, so we couldn't really figure out how he managed to speak and listen to himself.
It was quite clever, really.
Delayed, it was a bit strange. But he said, oh, I'm here with someone famous.
Yeah.
And we were looking and we're like,
no, you're not.
No, you're not. And he
absolutely
said, yeah,
not.
I'm here with someone absolutely famous.
And I'm thinking you're going to look stupid in a minute. There's really nobody famous around you.
I'm here with Jodie Scheckter.
Oh my God, it was.
You actually said that out loud. You went, oh my God, it is.
Because he was looking completely anonymous and not at all famous. And I didn't recognise him one little bit until he put the microphone up to him and he spoke and went, oh my Lord.
Oh my God, it is.
It really is. It really is Jodie Scheckter.
And then you ran forward with your camera.
Yeah, he was promoting his organic farm, which apparently he does now. I didn't know that.
Well, they had like the big burger stand, and there was basically an entire pig roasting on a stick, which was actually quite gross.
An organic pig, though.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind.
Still a pig.
Jodie Scheckter's organic pig, I'll have you know. So that was quite nice of him to turn up with one of those, so keep us all fed.
Except you couldn't get near the food because of the queues.
Oh, no, yeah, there was about 70 people deep in the queue too, so we starved.
There was a tour around the paint shop. That didn't have a queue at all.
No.
Which is a good thing. And we watched them printing out those big stickers.
Yeah.
To go on the car.
With everybody's names on them.
And then we went through another bit where they actually spray the paint onto the cars.
It's kind of weird because it's obviously the shop where they basically obviously spray individual bits of the cars and put them all before they all get put together. But there was no indication of how it might work. We essentially walked into an empty garage and walked out of an empty garage.
Well, there was a guy talking, and the only useful thing I picked up was that it basically takes about 6 hours to spray and dry one bit, and sometimes they do 10 bits at once.
I did hear that it was mostly a team of guys, except there's one girl. That was a useless bit of information I picked up. I think it would have been better if there was somebody in there spraying. Obviously, you know, we couldn't go in there. But I think I'd rather kind of stand outside and see what goes into spraying a car than I would walk into an empty awning and then come back out again.
It was quite cool to see the bit where they store the paints, because it said like BAR olive colour
and
BAR white and stuff.
They still have all
do they still have that?
They still have the old colours from Lucky Strike. I don't know, actually. But they're all labelled and all named and they're all still in there. So I guess if they ever need to do up a Lucky Strike car, they're all set to go.
Saying that, they had a marquee with a couple of old cars in, didn't they?
They had the original debut livery of the BAR, which I don't think you'd seen before, had you?
I've never seen it. It's like half blue and half white.
Came as a bit of a culture shock to you, didn't it?
With a big zip up the middle.
I think it may go down as one of the worst liveries of any car.
Has a big zip up the middle.
On the left-hand side was the blue and yellow of 555 branding, so you had blue wheels on that side, front and rear. And then on the right-hand side, it had the white and red of Lucky Strike. So you had red wheels on that side. It looked terrible. Really,
and it had a big zip up the middle.
A big zip up the middle. No wonder it didn't win any races.
They had some really silly games and things like guess how many balloons are in my Honda Civic and guess the weight of the Honda-shaped cake. It was all a bit country fate.
I think one of the worst things was they had this great big CNC routing machine.
£700,000.
And they were doing, can you pick up the duck? Like the crane machine you get, you know, when you go on holiday. Can you grab the SpongeBob toy, that thing? And it wasn't done in an ironic way, which would have been great. You know, here's our £7,000 worth of machine. Look how cool it is. It can pick up a duck. It was like, we really want you to try and pick up a duck.
With our £700,000 worth of machinery.
I wasn't really bothered by that. And I was a bit disappointed that all the machines had signs on them saying, these machines run 24/7, you know. They never stop. We're always working. We're always striving to be better. And they were clearly all off. And I kind of think if your team's finishing 8th and 9th at the moment in Grand Prix, you maybe want to be working a bit harder. And I'm sure you've got an open day for the factory, so there's health and safety concerns and stuff, but maybe somebody could have been doing some work, trying to, you know, push the car forward a bit.
Well, all the things had signs on, but they didn't actually tell you what they did. It was like, this machine costs this much money and it takes up this much power and stuff. And you're like, right, but what does it do?
Yeah, it doesn't give you any indication of what part it plays in actually building the car. Does it do the monocoque? Does it do the aerodynamics? It didn't give any clear indication. And again, it was all switched off, so they all looked the same. They were just great big yellow arms just sitting there.
They also had like some cool bits like a Scalextric track, but you had to pay to have a go, which is fine because, you know, it's for charity. But did we really have to pay for everything?
What would you rather do? Up the ticket price, maybe?
Yeah, because, I mean, the tickets were really rather cheap.
Yeah.
But then once you got inside, it was like, pay to go on this, pay to go in here, pay to attend the Q&A session, pay to get this autograph. And I would really rather just pay more money to get inside and then everything be free.
I think that would have solved their problem with the queues as well, because I believe they oversold the tickets. Or at least they didn't account for the amount of people that were going to arrive. They didn't have enough food stalls. They didn't have enough things to keep people occupied, and the queues were not being shifted enough. They weren't getting people around the area quick enough. So if you up the ticket price and deterred a couple of people from arriving, you'd end up with the same amount of money, but with less the hassle, I think.
I think it was quite boring, really.
We didn't
stay very long.
It was a bit of a letdown. It was less than my expectations. Possibly I went with the wrong expectations. I think it was aimed more at children, or maybe it was aimed too much at children. You know, it's okay to have like a children area where, you know.
Except you had to pay to get in there.
Well, yeah, but parents could drop their kids in there and, you know, then go and look at the Formula One stuff. That would have been fine. But actually, most of it was geared to children. And I didn't get that impression when we bought the tickets. And maybe I misread it or maybe misinterpreted it. I thought it could have been. It certainly wasn't for
geeks like you.
Well, I was gonna say like long-term Formula One fans, you know. For a team that's, you know, not doing as well as they have been, I think they got quite a few people through the gate, I guess, but probably more than they were anticipating.
Didn't you also say that you thought the factory was a bit factory-ish? As opposed to like the McLaren factory, which is gorgeous. This one was just white and like any factory you've ever been in.
Well, yeah, you get the impression from looking at the trucks, which obviously, you know, they blacken the wheels and they clean them up and they're obviously spotless, the motorhomes and that kind of stuff. The factory was very much like any other factory in England, used and working and stuff. But I just think if we went to compare it to the McLaren factory, I wouldn't bet. I would put money on it being cleaner, nicer, better presented. It's okay. It's nice that they, you know, I don't want to discourage teams from doing this. It's really good that a team would happily open their factory doors to Formula One fans. That's a great thing. I think I'd have given it a lick of paint first and maybe, you know, been a bit more organised.
Yeah, it lacked some organisation and forethought, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if they do it again next year, maybe they'll get it sorted.
But it probably won't go.
It'll probably give it a miss.
Next week is the European Grand Prix on the 22nd of July at Nürburgring. The circuit is 3.198 miles, which will be 60 laps, and the previous three winners were Michael Schumacher, Fernando Alonso, and Michael Schumacher.
This is going to be an interesting race to watch because it appears from the last race that drivers who were struggling with their Bridgestone tyres, namely Kimi, Alonso, and maybe Kubica, it seems those drivers have almost got on top of the tyre issues, you know, from the switch from Michelin to the Bridgestone tyres, and they seem to be giving their teammates a run for their money. So it's going to be a battle of the
second drivers.
Except they're really probably the first drivers in this case. Yeah. But it's the battle of the first drivers who were second drivers who now should maybe become first drivers.
I am really looking forward to watching it on TV and seeing everything.
Right.
Seeing everything all at once. It's going to be brilliant. But we're not going to be listening to the commentary, are we?
No. Murray's making a comeback. He's going to be doing the Five Live commentary during qualifying and the race.
Unfortunately, I've never heard Murray do any commentary or anything, but I appreciate that it's some kind of genius.
Absolutely. So we're going to crank up the radio, turn down the TV, and watch ITV whilst listening to Murray. It's going to be excellent.
Talking of commentary, I heard that the people that do the F1 cinema commentary are not necessarily as good as you'd hope.
This is the HD, F1 in HD in the cinema thing.
Yes.
I heard that it went quite well, though, and they're going to be doing some more throughout the year.
Yeah, I think they're going to do the rest of the season, aren't they?
But Jonathan Palmer is doing the commentary. He's not getting great reviews, is he?
Not really.
Are we going to go see a race, maybe check it out?
I think we definitely should. Obviously not this one, because you wouldn't want to miss out on Murray.
No.
But definitely in the future.